J.R. Ward joins us by phone tonight. She's the author of more than 30 novels, including the best-selling Black Dagger Brotherhood series. Tonight, we're going to talk about her current series, The Bourbon Kings. Her final and latest book in this series is titled Devil's Cut. Hi, J.R.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start by asking you about location, because your book is set in a place that's certainly near and dear to many Cincinnatians, and it happens to be your adopted home state. So tell us about Charlemont, if that's the way you pronounce it, and Easterly.
Charlemont, Kentucky, is sort of mirror of Louisville. And my husband, who is a fifth or sixth generation Kentuckian from Louisville, the first date that we ever went on, I said, oh, you're from Louisville. And he goes, no, let's say it together. It's Louisville. So when I decided to set the book in Louisville, I had to pick a name that could be mispronounced. So Charlemont could be Charlemont, Charlemont. And I thought, this is a perfect, you know, mirror of the name. And then Easterly is the mansion of the Bradfords. And there are a couple of key historic estates here in town that have long captured my fancy and imagination. And Easterly is set up on a big hill overlooking the Ohio River and downtown Charlemont. And it's sort of an amalgam of many of these old family estates with grounds and a gracious old house, many rooms and a couple of ghosts. And, you know, I think one of the things that makes the series Bourbon Kings so evocative for people is that the settings are kind of worlds into themselves. The mansion is very much its own specific character in the books.
And what shape is the mansion and the Bradford Bourbon Company in as the novel opens?
Well, so conflict makes for good story. And if you had a bunch of wealthy people living in a gracious manor house, behaving themselves and living their lives responsibly and with great thoughtfulness and self-actualization, you don't really have a lot of conflict. So basically, the family is going through a financial reversal, which affects their ability to keep their house and their business and everything that these children of great wealth and distinction have long taken for granted is in play as the result of their father squandering money and embezzlement and all that sort of white-collar crime stuff. So it really puts the family in crisis, and it tests their bonds, and it forces them to grow. And, you know, if your identity is wrapped up in being wealthy and having money at your disposal, you take for granted how things will work for you in the world. And it comes as a crushing surprise, particularly to the daughter, Jin, that life does not run quite as smoothly if you can't just throw money at it and make your problems go away.
Is it important as a writer, as an author, for a character to have a redeeming quality?
First of all, the way the stories work for me is they kind of reveal themselves and do what they're going to do. So I don't experience this as if I created anything. I'm merely recording the pictures in my head. So that can sometimes get me in trouble because I'm a commercial author. And what that means is I can write what I want, but I'm trying to write to a very specific group in the market and trying to understand what things thematically and with regard to narration and dialogue and character development and all that stuff will appeal to those individuals. And I think redeeming qualities are very important for the reader to have an open heart to a given person's journey through conflict and resolution. But by that same token, if you're going to have an antagonist, it's great that they have no redeeming characteristics, you know? Unfortunately, if your antagonist have no redeeming characteristics and they're cartoon figures. So what I have found as I deconstruct the novels that I've written, and again, I don't feel like I create anything. It just sort of appears and I just do what my Rice Krispies tell me, as I say. The very best and most interesting heroes and heroines have great weaknesses that are not always resolved. And the best antagonists always have little keyholes into their own humanity, although they're often obviously overridden by other prime directives in terms of their character. But I think there has to be a balance. Otherwise, again, you're talking about two-dimensional cartoon kind of figures, and that doesn't really resonate.
I was fascinated where the title Devil's Cut came from. Tell us about making bourbon and Angel's Share and Devil's Cut.
So obviously, in my other writer's hat, I write about vampires. And what's wonderful about that is that no one can come up to you and say, oh, you misrepresented vampires, you know? But I knew if I was going to do something that actually existed in the real world, although the pictures and the narratives and everything come to me, I had to make sure that I got the details correctly. And so I did a lot of research into the bourbon industry. And what I love about it is again, you know, sort of like Charlemagne and Easterly, its own world, and it's its own language and its own history, its own culture, its own traditions. And it's this wonderful, rich pastiche of different kinds of people and different choices. And the product itself is so tied with Kentucky and Kentucky's fortunes and Kentucky's history. And I wanted to be very respectful of that. So I was fortunate enough to speak to a number of individuals who make bourbon, master distillers and bourbon company owners. And as a result of that, I learned a lot of the terms of art. And so, and again, this is in the book, The Devil's Cut. There's a friend of ours who owns a liquor company, and he goes, you know, vodka's not a problem. He's like, I can turn a spigot on and give you vodka. He said, now bourbon requires time. So you have to factor that in as these liquor companies are trying to ramp up to the great enthusiasm for bourbon that's going on right now in this country and worldwide. And so obviously bourbon is stored in brick houses in these beautiful charred white oak barrels. What's fascinating to me about it is the brick houses are not insulated in any way, but they're also called rack houses. You know, brick houses are rack houses. And so the actual seasons as they pass, cooling and warming these oak barrels, it creates this wonderful dialogue between the nascent liquor and the wood that encases it. So when you put bourbon into a barrel and you give it 10 years, you don't get the same amount of bourbon out at the other end because some of it has evaporated. And in the evaporation, they call that the angel's share because it's just this sort of mysterious, wonderful, I love the phrase, and that's why the second book is called The Angel's Share. It's sort of almost an offering to the bourbon gods, if you will. And then the devil's cut is the bourbon that goes into the wood, the charred oak. It's just another term or romanticizing term for part of the aging process. And I thought it would be very nice to use those two terms of art as the titles of the second and third books in the series, just as yet again a tribute to the world that the books are set in.
And I think it's just fascinating to learn that backstory. And I thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so very kindly for having me.
I've been talking with J.R. Ward about the final book in her Bourbon King series. It is titled Devil's Cut, and you'll find more information about it at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh.